My name's Bob, and I'm an addict.
If you are going through a divorce or a separation and you are gut sick, you are at the right meeting. If you have a child who is using and breaking your heart, you are at the right meeting. If you have a physical disease that causes you bodily pain and instills fear into your heart, you have chosen the right meeting to attend. See, for as we live, we suffer. The significant difference with a recovering addict is that we no longer have to suffer alone. We have each other. You know, for the next hour or two, no matter what else happens in the world, we will have the opportunity to be together and to share this time. Now, you may think that that's a coincidence, or you may believe that this just happened, but I choose to believe that the God of my understanding has brought me here to share with you a gift. See, I have a gift, and I now have the opportunity to share the gift. That's what the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous give me. So the next hour, man, we're going to be able to look at ourselves a little bit and look at our own pain and suffering. And we're going to be able to do that in the company of each other. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like you to just give the person next to you a hug. This is my official hugger, by the way. And periodically, I may need a hug. The most significant part of that act is it challenges the concept of addiction in that we are alone in our disease. When you come to Narcotics Anonymous, you are no longer alone. No matter how you may feel at any given time, there is someone here who will hug you, who will touch you, who will love you, who will listen to you, and who will give you some of the best and worst advice that you will ever hear anywhere. And I want you to know, we do not recover in these rooms by the advice we give each other. I have given and received some of the best and worst advice in these rooms. Let me give you an example. We often say to people, don't get involved in a relationship for the first year in your recovery. How many people here have been successful with that? I usually make some comment about identifying the bullshitter, but it usually hurts people's feelings because they just don't understand what kind of relationship they've had with themselves. We give that advice, but that's not our experience. Our experience is we come in here, hook up with the first person who will have us, have some torrid, loving, deep, meaningful, intimately sexual relationship, and then we break our heart. If that's happened to you recently, you are in the right meeting. Because that is our experience. And our experience is that no matter what pain we inflict upon each other, no matter what bad advice we give each other, we recover in spite of it. We recover in spite of it because in these rooms there is a love for each other that exists. Now, we still continue to give that advice, don't get into a relationship. But our experience is we get into relationships, so if you're going to get into the relationship, get a group of folks who, when that relationship falls apart, because you won't talk to those folks when you're in that relationship because you'll be too busy. But when it falls apart, you will need those folks. That's our experience. We can get through any kind of suffering as long as we're willing to do it together. You know, I'd like us to just to take a moment, though, because we're going to be pretty self-absorbed here as we go in through the steps a little bit.
But there are some people tonight who really need the company of another addict who is clean, who are out there standing on the corner, back in the alley, behind a dumpster, shooting a bag, selling their ass, doing a stick-up, doing what we do to continue to feed our disease. There is somebody out there who you personally know who could use this message. I'd ask you to just take a moment and invite them into this meeting through a piece of prayer to the God of your own understanding. Just think of that person and ask God to give them that same blessing and that same grace and that same gift of recovery that he has chosen to give us. I will tell you to expect them in the rooms. I have done this at retreats where before the end of the weekend retreat, and last one I did in Toronto, we had three people that were prayed for show up over the course of that weekend. This thing works. And if you expect it to understand it, to figure it out, and to be able to control it, you're in the wrong room. All we can do is ask on behalf of another addict. All we can ask is that God who gave us that message to give it to somebody else. And what that does, though, for a brief moment, it takes us outside of ourselves. And I don't know what your pain or what your suffering was, but I will bet you that when you took that moment and prayed for somebody else, your pain and suffering stopped. See, because God is a person of hope. My God is a God of hope. I have dialogues in my God. I know when I get to the next life, I know the word that I'm going to use to get in. It's the same word that I'm going to share here tonight. I have the word to open the gates of heaven for me. See, when God gets to heaven and God says to me, Bob, were you honest? He's going to look at my heart and know, man, I have been less than honest. And when he said, were you pure and chaste? Oh, he knows if I was an N.A., that wasn't a possibility. He's going to ask me, did I do many of your great works? And I'm going to say no. And he's going to ask me, then why should I let you into the gates of heaven? And here's what I'm going to tell him. Because I am grateful for what you gave me. I am grateful for this gift we call recovery. I know that I did not earn it, work for it, deserve it. In fact, there were times that I did not want it, that I cursed the God who gave it to me. But in spite of all that, I'm here tonight. And more significantly, you're here tonight. See, I'm going to throw gratitude at God. See, because I'm going to tell him, man, there were days that I prayed, just give me a day without pain. And I don't care what else you do. See, it wasn't until I started to get the wrinkles out of my belly in here that I started to get desires. See, the pain that happens in my life today is when I start to take control of what's out here. When I try to control the world I live in and the people who live in it with me, be they my wife, my children, the people who I work with, the men I sponsor, or the people that I meet in these rooms, when I seek to control anybody outside of myself, I have set myself up for pain and suffering. And the only thing is when it's going to happen, to what degree it's going to happen, how long it's going to last till I start working these steps and remove myself from that pain. A vast majority of the pain in my life today comes from unfulfilled desires. When I came in here, I said, God, just give me what I need. And every day that I have been in here, I have gotten everything that I need. What causes me problems, in spite of the amount of time I have in these rooms, is when I get desires. And whether that desire is for a person, whether that desire is for a thing, or whether that desire is to be in a place, and whether that place is here physically or mentally, spiritually, emotionally, or romantically, it is a place. And if I seek to be other than where I'm at, I have set myself up for great pain. So if you're sitting here tonight and your ass is in pain, just think about whether it's a pain of desire. I want them. Oh, God, I can't live without them. Or if it's a desire to want your child clean. Or if it's a desire to want your child to be behaviorally correct. I have learned to be grateful here by learning to take what God gives me, not what I want. To look at what God gives me on a daily basis. This is a rhetorical question, so nobody needs to answer, because there's usually at least one person in here who will either want the attention or something but haven't answered this. But think about this. Can you tell me how many blue cars that you saw on the way here tonight? On the way to this convention, is there anybody here who really can tell me how many blue cars they see? But if I ask you, would you tell me on the way home how many blue cars you see? Isn't it a pretty good probability that you would be able to see them? Because on the way here, we passed many blue cars. But we weren't looking for blue cars. See, we find what we seek. And sometimes we seek and have such desires that we miss the people, places, things, and events that God brings into our life to enhance us and bring us joy, because we're locked on seeing only what it is that we want to see. And we say, God, send me a person, and God sends us somebody, and we say, and I did this, by the way, I said, well, listen, if it wasn't for the desire for women on men's part, we would not pray. That's one of the first things that men learn to pray for. Come on, guy. I mean, I see some heads nodding and bobbing. Oh, God, send me someone. I mean, look at the hallway, man. You see the guy standing in the corner going. Them's the guys that are saying that prayer. I can tell when they're praying. Oh, God, let her stop and talk to me. Or she'd hug me. And when God answers that prayer, the first thing we say is, oh, she's too old. She's too fat. She's too skinny. She's too this. She's too that. God, give me, woo. And we miss what God puts into our life. See, we're so busy looking for stuff that we desire that we often miss the very things that God puts into our life. Think about how many times you've come to a meeting when somebody has shared something tremendous, and after the meeting somebody said, man, didn't you hear that person share? Wasn't that wonderful? And you don't have a goddamn clue as to what was said, because your mind was out there in Easter Blitz somewhere chasing something, thinking about something, doing something, desiring something. See, we drive by beautiful blue skies and never see them. You know, we walk by flowers and don't notice them. We sit by the river and don't hear it flow. You know, we don't often take what God gives us, man. If you came to this convention looking to see who's sleeping with who, who's wearing what outfit, who's talking what shit, that's what you're going to see here. Okay? But if you came here to give and to share and to receive the message of recovery and to share your pain and to share your joy, you're going to do that. See, because we find what it is that we seek. But you know what? In this program, spirituality is paradoxical. See, I'm here telling you to look for something, and now out of my next breath, I'm going to tell you, don't look for anything. Tonight, don't look for the message I'm going to give you. Don't look around this room and look. Just ask God to show you what it is in your heart that brought you to this meeting. Just ask the God of your understanding to reveal to you what it is that you need to do to let go of this pain. See, we don't need to carry pain. There are people here who will share our pain. But we get too prideful, too ignorant, or too fearful to let it go. You know, the other thing that I know about the things that cause me pain is that it has no respect of time in these rooms. I have been in these rooms a long time, and I'm going to tell you what, when I come in pain, I'm letting you all know that I'm in pain, right? Because I don't have any place else to go. And I'm going to humble my ass, and I'm going to show it to you. See, but you know what that does to most of you? You look at me with time, and you say, look at that big son of a bitch, man. He got all the time. He don't have what I fucking want. He don't have what I want. Look at this thing, because y'all get all prideful and shit. That's mean because you haven't hit that pain where I'm at. See, but I know if I don't surrender that false pride, if I let you make me some kind of guru because I got a couple of years in here, or if I think that I'm some kind of guru, or that I have some kind of special message or something powerful gift here other than the one that was freely given to me that I'm just going to give back, then I set myself up for big pain. See, because I isolate myself from you by doing that. See, or you isolate yourself from me because you don't want to realize that you can have 20 years in recovery and be gut sick. You don't want to realize that you can be 40-some years old, have 20 years in the program, have a good job, good business, good wife, good respect, and be miserable. And if there's any guys here with that kind of pain, I got a special message for you. You hit 43, you get about 15 years in these rooms, and you all of a sudden want to go to Iowa and you don't know where the hell it is, you come and see me because I've been to Iowa. Right? And see, I'm watching a lot of good men of my age and ilk in this fellowship go through that very thing right now, and I watch the first thing that this fellowship does to the very men who have carried this message to them is abandon them. I don't want this guy to sponsor me no more. Well, look, if you look to me to be something, I'm going to disappoint you. I'm going to disappoint you because I ain't nothing other than what God gives me on a daily basis. Then you're going to see what you want to see when you look. But there are a lot of guys that I know who go through this, you know, either get physically sick. You know, when people start to die around here, and I've had three or four very, very good friends in this fellowship die on me recently, and I have watched people in their life space separate. See, because we don't like to endure pain. We don't like to see the people that we have opened our hearts to and developed relationship with leave us, whether they leave us in death or whatever. And so we back away from them. We start figuring out reasons why we don't need to be there to share that suffering because we don't like to suffer sometimes together. But I'm going to tell you, if I'm going through that, I'm going to go to some people, and I have had people come to me, and I'm going to tell you, you can recover in these rooms, but you know, some days you're the tree and some days you're the dog. You know? I mean, there are just some that somebody just got, there you go. I know how sharp this crowd is now. The other thing that I know about pain is I get afraid. And see, when I get afraid, I want to do the same thing that this disease always forces me to do. I want to isolate. I want to move back. I want to move away from. I don't want to show you that I'm less than you think I am. I don't want you to know that I'm afraid because the places that I have been and been raised in and been, if you showed fear, man, you got hurt. But I want to tell you, if you don't learn to show fear in here, you die. If you are afraid to show your fear in here, you will die. And whether you die a slow, agonizing death or whether you die a quick one, if you do not share the secrets that you carry, you will die. You know, sometimes we get physically sick and we get a disease and we start to die, right? The minute we hit the disease, somebody say, we HIV positive, we in the grave. That fear jumps up. But if we don't reach out, if we don't share that that's where we're at, that we need held and that we need loved and that we need cared for and that we need nurtured, we die. And whether we die immediately physically, we start to die mentally, and then we start to die spiritually because we have separated ourselves. We cannot let any disease, physical, mental, or spiritual, separate us. All that we have is each other, And that is an extremely sufficient message. I look sometimes to other branches of spirituality that have 5,000 years of written tradition, Judaism, Hinduism, Catholicism, you know, the writings of Wesley, if you're Protestant, and what do we have but about 50 years in N.A.? So in annals of time, we don't have a whole lot of written stuff and a whole lot of history and a whole lot of tradition that we can get out of books. All we have are each other. But I want to tell you, I have been through a lot of different situations that were extremely painful in here, and I want to tell you that what you can receive out of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous is sufficient. Our message is sufficient. It's sufficient to help ease the pain that we live with on a daily basis. How do we get rid of the pain? The first thing is the acceptance that we have it, no matter what it is. The acceptance, and the acceptance of what goes with that. The acceptance that I won't be able to have the arms of my last sponsor hug me because he's passed. That my son or daughter is out there using, and I will not have the pleasure of their company because the disease is separating us. I can't deny it. I can't act like it's not happening. I can't, because the first step in my portion of recovery is the acceptance of what is. And see, there's a lot of things I watch and have tried to change. I'm not too keen on getting old. I mean, I look at these women who look at me and hug me, and I want them to think I'm a stud, and they think I'm daddy. Right? But if I don't accept that, if I try to be a stud, I won't even get to hug. See, I have to accept who I am and where I am. I got to accept the time and history that I'm born. I got to accept my basic body type. I got to accept, and this is a kicker, man. I have got to accept at some point in my life the parents that God chose to give me. And I don't know if anybody else came from a dysfunctional family, but I did. And at some point I had to accept that that was part of God's spiritual path for me. And with acceptance comes peace. But you cannot reach acceptance unless you reach that level of honesty. The other thing is belief. You know, there's a line in our book, Just for Today, that says, just for today, I will have faith in somebody in NA who believes in me. Faith is the substance of things that we hope for. We walk in these rooms hoping to recover, but not yet seen. When we walk in here, we haven't seen recovery in our own lives. We have to look outside of ourselves. We have to look around this room to see people who have recovered from the disease, people who live comfortably with HIV, people who have gone through divorces without picking up, people who have lost children, people who have gone through all the painful things that life has. But just for today, I will have that faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. See, when I walked in these doors, I did not believe it was possible to recover. You believed, and so there was belief in the situation, and so I recovered. Whatever that situation is, whatever that pain that you're having, if you have somebody who believes in a way of recovering, in a way that, you know, you got sick from a lost relationship and you got a sponsor that'll put their arms around you and tell you that you will survive, that you will be all right, that this will pass when you do not believe it, that some person in NA who wants to help you in your recovery and who believes in you. Man, I recover in NA because people here believe in me. And they taught me to come to that point where I believe in myself. I was hanging around these rooms and this little guy come up to me, wrinkled his nose all up, give him one of them old puss faces and put his finger up and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, I didn't ask you to be my sponsor. Now, When you're my size and crazy and new in recovery, I got to tell you, there ain't a whole lot of people that want to be in a small, confined space with you. So I did not have people offering me rides to meeting and reaching out to me. So I was quite taken back when this little guy comes up and points his finger up in my face and tells me he wants to be my sponsor. I said, but I didn't ask you to be my sponsor. He said, I know you didn't, but I told you I'm going to be your sponsor anyway. And I said, okay. You know, the bottom line is we all want to be wanted. But I wanted to know what he wanted. See, I thought, you know, what's he want, man? Because I ain't got no money. I ain't got a whole brain. You know, maybe he's getting it. Maybe he wants my body. Am I giving off some kind of signs? I said to him, why? He said, because you're too sick and too stupid to know that you need one. And so until you get to the point where you know that you need one, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he was my sponsor for 14 and a half years and taught me a tremendous amount about living. See, these steps are a path of living. Living without a drug. And living without being in pain, least constant pain. And that's what he taught me. He taught me about relationships, taught me how to work these steps. And I came in with a group of people who were like really into the steps, man. They had been through 28-day program, and they were like in the 9th and 10th step in 90 days and deeply philosophical and spiritual. And I was saying, well, what you got me working on? He said, get to recovery. No, man, I want steps, man. And these guys were always saying, well, you know, because guys, we all try to do this one-up stuff with each other. Men are very competitive, ladies, if you ever noticed that. Just let one of you walk by and two of us will go kill each other for you. But these guys were all talking about all these, I'm working the ninth step. Boy, what step are you? Oh, man, I'm working seven. What step are you working, Bob Ozer? I go to him, I said, man, look, give me a spiritual principle. So I said, all right, you want a spiritual principle? I'm going to give you your first spiritual principle, Bob. Don't steal, and you will not go to jail. No, I want something spiritual, man. And I go tell these guys, don't steal, you're going to jail. They're going to laugh at me, man. Oh, he said, that's it. So you run around being a little thief, you're going to go to jail. You go to jail, you're going to be in pain. I love you no matter what you do or who you are, but I can't keep you from the pain unless you're willing to change, Bob. So don't steal, and you won't go to jail. I learned how to say that to the guys I sponsored. Hey, Dick, cut that stealing out, man. You're going to go to jail. If you go to jail, you're going to pick up. Now, I didn't believe it. But I believed he believed it, and that was sufficient. And we give away what we have here. Sometimes we create some nonsensical shit, but most of the times we're giving away what it is that's been given to us. So this guy got me to the first step, some period down the road, and I said, what? Teach me the first step. Okay. He said, do you know how they catch monkeys in South America? And I said, teach me the first step. Powerless? I know what power is. I've read the words, man. I got all this. I'm going to teach you a principle, Bob. Do you know how? I thought, now, is this a trick question? It's got to be a trick question. He said, no, watch National Geographic and you will see this. Do you know how? Man, I would make up stuff because I did not want to admit that I did not know an answer to a question that my sponsor asked me. And I fully understand that when the guys that I sponsor start to lay that bullshit rap out there, right? I know what that comes from. But he said, what they do, Bob, is they take a bottle They take a bottle that has a loop on it, like it's on this picture, and they tie a rope through this loop, and then they tie the bottle to a tree. And then they take a nut, and the monkeys are up in the trees, and they're watching this hunter do this, man, and they're all, they're watching. And this hunter takes this nut, and he drops it in the bottle. And then he walks away from the bottle. And the monkeys run out of the tree like crazy people, trying to get to that nut first. And when they get to it, they stick their hand in the bottle, and they grab it. But the opening on that bottle is such that you can get your hand in, but the minute you grab the nut and make a fist, you can't get the hand out. Now that monkey will run and almost tear its shoulder off trying to snap that rope. That monkey will see that hunter come and bare its teeth, get nasty, get ugly, show its ass for all it's worth. And when that don't work, that monkey will start to cry and whine and think you was calling for your mother again. But that monkey will do everything but let go of the nut. He said, "Bob, what do you and the monkey have in common?" So if you're sitting here in pain tonight, if you're sitting, I don't care what the source of that pain is, all you have to do is become willing to let it go. But see, once we hook on to something, we're like, we don't know. Man, that hunter got knocked that monkey unconscious. We got to get severe pain around here to let it go. I mean, think of some of the relationships we have been in. I mean, we get to big pain, and we still holding on to some nonsensical shit. Let it go. Freedom comes from the ability and the spiritual principle of detachment, of being able to let go of the things that hurt us, whether those things be desire, people, places, things, or fears. Letting them go is the first path to freedom. I know you all woke up one day and said, "Well, gonna let go of my addiction today. Time to be clean." Oh, you mean it didn't work that way for you either? You mean you had to bring yourself into the presence of other addicts for a long time until you came to believe, until somehow this force or power removed it? See, that force or power that mystically, cosmically, gracefully removes it is the power that I choose to call God. All we have to do here is admit. And then we can move on to the second step. Came to believe. Power greater than ourselves. That power that brought us in this room. The power that gave us this day of peace. The power that gave us that gift of recovery. That same power can relieve our pain if we will seek it. And that God comes in many faces. God has shown me himself in every man that I have sponsored. See, the first thing that my God does with a man that I sponsor is show me what he's better at than I am, where he's further along the spiritual path than I am. And that's how he keeps my ass humble when I sponsor them. Right? But he also shows me that there's something out of this relationship for me to learn. That I'm not some kind of thing, you know, that God works through me and that I'll have a gift to share, but that the men that I share with will also have a gift. So if you think you're going to put your ass out to help a newcomer, I'm going to tell you something. That newcomer, in my experience, is you're going to get more back than you ever give. See, because you can't plant corn without reaping corn. And you can't plant wheat without reaping wheat. And you can't plant patience and tolerance and love and understanding and giving and charity without planting it. And what better place to plant it than the people that we meet every day in and out of these rooms? I mean, if we want to be spiritually blessed and spiritual wealth, and I'm going to tell you what, I come in without a high school diploma, I have a master's degree. I come in without a job, I got a company that employs over 250 people. I come in without a family relationship, I got a wife who loves me, I got kids who love me, I got grandkids that they're naming after me. It don't get any better than that, folks, but you know what? I know sure as I keep trying to give it away that God's going to give me something better back, because that's my experience in that second step. Because he sends people in here to believe in me. But see, if you out there are in pain and God is throwing you, if you're drowning, let me give you an example. If you're drowning in a river and God throws you a yellow life preserver, are you going to say, no, no, I want the red one? Right? But see, we're in pain around here, and people reach out to us, and we say, no, no, that ain't the way I want it. No, no. I want that person to take me somewhere. And they didn't, or he didn't, or she didn't, and that headache sucks. Because we found the one or two people who are in their own sickness for that given day, and we have missed all the other ones that God's throwing at us. This is a loving God. He got a lot of them life jackets, man, because he's throwing me red ones, blue ones, green ones, purple ones, boom, 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 boom. And there have been a couple I've said, no, no, until I bobbed a couple of times in the water. See, God bobbed my ass in pain, man. I said, whoop, hey. And you know what? Every time I do that, I find it to be sufficient. And every time I do that, I come to believe. People think I'm a pretty wise guy. No, I'm just a guy who has made a lot of mistakes that I have learned from. I mean, if you can do it, I've probably done it and done it wrong at least once. And before I came into these rooms, I used to do it over and over and over and over wrong. That's the insanity of my disease. And see, when I keep going back to the same bad relationship over and over, when I keep running my kid to treatment programs and bailing his ass out over and over, I'm not helping anybody, man. I'm enabling the shit out of people. Came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. What is my sanity? What's restored to me in my sanity is my ability to choose. As an addict, I have no choice. When my addiction demands, I pay the price. When the bell rings, I stand up. Man, you're looking at somebody who stood out on a corner at 4 o'clock in the morning knowing that the man couldn't possibly be there till 10, 11 o'clock, but he didn't get up till then. Man, I love the street out there today, man. Everybody carrying beavers. They deliver like fucking pizza now. Hey, whoop, man, send me Coke. Okay, be right over. Man, I have to wait my ass out on the street corner a long time. Sick, shivering, sick. Today, man, home delivery. Technology, these little beeper things, man, I guess. But I had no choice. I would get paid, and I would think, oh, no, man, I got these bills to pay. I got to feed the kids. I got to do this. And I'd start to head home, and then I'd think, oh, man, just a taste. I need a taste. I worked hard. I earned it. And I'd head back, and I'd say, no, man, you know if you go in there, you're going to end up coming out 3 days later, and you're going to be broke. And I'd head home. And then I'd head back, and then I'd head home, and then I'd head back. I never could get home. I always copped. That's my powerlessness. Right? If you're in a bad relationship or you're in pain, get with somebody who is not and ask them to hug you and help you and stay with you. In the beginning of my recovery, I stayed in the company of recovering folks because if I knew that if I was alone for any time, I would pick up. Because I could not trust me, but I could trust you. Oh, and let me tell you something else. Have I trusted people in here and been disappointed? Has some Has somebody violated my trust? God. Yes, they have. And so if you're in a relationship with someone and you give everything that you have, you hold nothing back, and that person walks out on you, what does that mean? Well, it means you're going to be in pain. Okay? It means that you have made a mistake in the person you have chosen. But it also means that you are capable of having relationship. That you have grown enough that you can risk, that you can reach out, and that's the only way that you can have relationship. That's the only way that you can have friendship. That's the only way that we can connect with each other is if we're willing to risk and to reach out. And yes, there are going to be some people who violate that trust and who take advantage of that. And what does that mean? That means that they will die a lonely, sick death. Because they will not be capable of having relationship as long as they do that. The saddest thing is I watch people that that happens to, and we close our heart. We say, well, it happened to me once. Well, I ain't going to trust anybody now. I mean, I had a sponsor once, and he wouldn't take my phone calls. Well, get another sponsor and quit bitching. And if that one don't take your calls, get another one. All that means is you've been choosing poorly. You start paying prices of pain and not picking up, and you'll learn to choose a little bit wisely. And that's our third step. The second step just allows us to take the third step because it gives us the choice. We make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. What are we given? I mean, take a look at where we come in, most of us, when we take that step. If you wanted to give me your life, and well, I don't know that I'd want it. That's why I ain't God. If you think I'm bullshitting, just think of some of the folks that you've sponsored sometime and they have wanted to give it to you. He goes, no, no, man, take that shit somewhere else. Whoa, save me. God gives us the ability to choose. Here's another kicker that I found out. I can make mistakes. I can choose poorly. I can choose poorly. It's okay. You know, it's all right to learn that way. It's all right to say, well, if this was a burner on a stove, it's all right to say, geez, I wonder if that's hot. Oh, shoot, it's hot. Then you ain't going to touch that burner again. We learn by that. We learn by our mistakes, unless we're have not taken that second step. And then we say, oh, wait a second. Maybe I touched it wrong. Let me touch it with this finger. Well, maybe if I touch it with my elbow. Maybe if I snuck up on it. Maybe if I waited till night. Maybe if I moved that stove to California. That's not a mistake. That's insanity when we keep doing that dumb shit over and over and over and over and over and over and hoping for a different result. See? But there's also another way to learn here, and that is to say to your sponsor, is that stove hot? He said, look at this blister. What do you think? Look at this blister, man. I'm going to tell you, somebody said to me, oh, I wish you'd have been here, Bob, to do the NA history. No, you don't want me to do the NA history. You do not want me to do it, because I'm going to talk about all the addicts that I know who died thinking we could drink alcohol as long as we weren't shooting dope. I'm going to tell you all the addicts I know who had 5 years in recovery and decided that they had heard enough here. See, when we first come in here in the first 5 years, we hear some good stuff. I mean, think about it. When you're new, man, somebody says something, and you run to somebody and you tell them this thing that you heard. Woo-hoo-hoo, right? I mean, this is good stuff, man. Let me share this good stuff. And after 5 years, it's the same old stuff. Right, after you hear 5 years, you've about heard it all. And if not become good stuff, it becomes same old. And I have watched people leave these rooms thinking that somehow that they had gotten it, and you hear them say at 5 years, all I see around here is newcomers. Ain't nobody here for me. And we don't walk out of here at 5 years to get dope. I have yet to see somebody with 5 years walk out of here and say, I think I'm going to go shoot tonight. But I hear them say, you know what? It just ain't here for me. You know, I'm hearing all the same. It's always the new, same old people saying the same old stuff. And I need to get my education. I need to work on my relationship. I need to start my business. And you tell your mother that, and your mother says, oh, my God, this child is really growing. That anything must have been something good for them, right? Because everybody out there thinks that's a wonderful thing, right? You had my sponsor tell you how wonderful that thing was. That's a disease of addiction. See, after 5 years of hearing the same old stuff, your job is now to share that same old stuff and to make somebody go, wow, man, that's some good stuff. Let me go tell somebody. See, because